Welcome to February 2026, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, your host, and this week I've been experiencing vertigo, a fascinating new experience for me that had me going to get that Epley maneuver done. I'm still a bit disoriented, so today I have a double feature for you. Today's first Desert Oracle Radio episode is the freshest release by Ken Lane. From January 25th, 2026, here is Black Widow Babies and Early Blooming Joshua Trees.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and we are now only 47 months away from 2030. It's also a new year, although the shine has already worn off a bit, doesn't take long. Like when you buy a new car and a big tumbleweed blows across the highway so quickly and with such force that it smacks your fender and leaves a horrific wound right there on the front of the car, which is made of cheap plastic for the most part. And then the check engine light starts blinking and buzzards are circling overhead. Welcome to the desert. The Joshua Tree National Park Gateway Communities, as the Chambers of Commerce like to call the stretch of highway between Morongo Valley and 29 Palms, was thrown into the most outrageous chaos a week or so back, as the National Park Service had cruelly closed off the tourist's favorite route into the national park through the humble desert village of Joshua Tree, south down Quail Springs Road to the miles-long one-lane parking lot that ends at the Federal Attractions ticket booth. Why did this occur? The Park Service has built new ticket booths to accommodate all the traffic, all the visitors. I remember when there weren't any ticket booths. You could just drive through the park. There were signs posted with prohibitions on commercial trucks cutting through the park. I remember those. And every now and then, NPS or the Highway Patrol would park a law enforcement cruiser in the dark to ticket whatever commercial drivers thought they'd slip through just this once. Back in the early 90s, I saw a U-Haul truck pulled over just beyond the south entrance, and about a dozen guys lined up beside the moving van. The Border Patrol got them there. And what was I doing there? I don't know. Probably just driving. But sometimes I'd just drive all night from wherever I lived in California through various darkened state and national parks, up and down the interstates. 3 a.m. steak and egg breakfast at the good old truck stops with good food. Maybe buy a Best of George Jones cassette for $2.99 on the way out, and a Snapple iced tea for the road.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Anyway, about our new ticket booths. Disgruntled tourists were forced to enter the national park on the 29 Palms side all week, or through the even more desolate southern entrance, somewhere off a lonesome exit of Interstate 10, way down in what we call the low desert. A few things are lower than the low desert. We don't care if retired celebrities and ex-presidents and golf pros live down there in gilded mansions with servants and cooks and investment advisors. But compared to us, they might as well live in a pile of trash on Salvation Mountain, where the fetid stench of the Salton Sea hangs heavy each day. We may not have much money up here, but we've got altitude. We can still go outside in the merry month of May without the skin cooking right off our heads. National park officials have since reopened the main artery into the national park, and we've had beautiful weather ever since. Maybe it's all connected. Even when the most popular entrance is closed, people who love our national park will tell you the Cottonwood Springs side is very nice. Less people, good camping, good hiking when it's not 110 degrees. That's the south entrance, not far off Interstate 10. But it's the scary side of Interstate 10, deep into no man's land, some 30 miles past the last lights of the Coachella Valley. Boy, it gets real dark out there real quick. One minute you're looking at multiple billboards saying last exit for Cinnabon or whatever, and then you're way out there. Our new Coachella National Monument is somewhere out in the darkness too. Somewhere in the darkness to your right. If you're driving east, eastbound on I-10, Eagle Mountain rising somewhere up to the left. And if you're lucky, you will safely make it across the desert, across the Colorado River and into Arizona, where your reward is clearly visible. Gas for $2 and change. And now it's time for Desert Oracle's strange and unusual facts, mostly about the desert, the wilderness, critters and criminals, etc. But we do have our wild card fact file, which I keep safe within my old Stratton 4-point ranger hat box, hermetically sealed with scotch tape. On every radio broadcast, as our listeners know, I pull a wild card fact from the hat box, but I never identify it as such. The miracle and mystery of the Joshua tree blooms. If you're in the Mojave High Desert this month, you've likely noticed some of our Joshua trees are beginning to bloom. Here and there, you'll see a big cream-colored cone of flowers atop a few of these beloved yucca trees. And everybody seems to know for sure what causes early blooms, late blooms, no blooms. Back in 2019, some trees started blooming in late October. Tricked by very cold and very wet storm systems, some people say. A certain amount of snow or freezing nights might do it. And sometimes it's springtime in the desert not long after New Year's. In a normal year with enough rain or snowfall, February is usually when we start noticing the JTs are a-blooming. But late-season snow and cold can trigger a bloom all the way into April or even early May. I've seen that myself more than a few times over the past 40 years of wandering these deserts. Because the California deserts are subject to the same wet and dry winter patterns and cycles as the rest of the state. And nobody knows exactly why Joshua trees bloom like crazy after some cold, wet winters, but not others. There tends to be about 3 years between the big blooms. And that irregular cycle doesn't coincide necessarily with big wildflower blooms. The desert keeps us guessing. And the Mojave loves to humble the self-proclaimed expert. My favorite reply to most of these questions is, it's a mystery, isn't it? Once those cones of cream-colored flowers are fertilized by the loyal and hungry yucca moth, you can expect those date-sized seed pods to sprout and eventually fall on your head while you're ducking under a Joshua tree that reaches over the trail. Our sandy-colored antelope ground squirrels with the racing stripes do a lot of the work in planting these Joshua tree seeds. And remember this, a Joshua tree is also a yucca tree, but the Mojave yucca is not a Joshua tree. The Mojave yucca is also called the Spanish dagger. And the soundscapes on this program, as always, are composed and recorded by our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Speaking of the color black, here's an interesting fact about black widow spiders. A single egg sac from a black widow spider can hatch up to 900 black widow baby spiders. Think about that next time you notice a silky little spider egg sac stuck on the camping gear you just brought home from the desert. Maybe just throw all that stuff out. Stay in a motel next time. Although black widows like motel rooms too. Not as much as campground porta potties, though. The southerner hippie country rock legend Gram Parsons reportedly drank at least a half dozen double tequilas, that's a dozen singles, before taking a big shot of morphine at the Joshua Tree Inn, which is where he died shortly thereafter, more than half a century ago. I believe it'll be 53 years this summer. The local part of his legend is just the last part of this life, the dying. As far as we know, he never wrote or recorded or performed any of his music out here. Wasn't much of a hiker. Less even of a naturalist. although he'd drive into the monument on that last trip and enjoy the views. And there are stories that he sat in with a bar band somewhere around here, location unverified. Grant Parsons was so bloated and swollen by the time he died out here at the young age of 26 that he could barely sit upright on a motorcycle. But his death did create an aura of mystery around the singer who left both the Byrds and the Burrito Brothers. And that helped with the marketing of his final album, Grievous Angel, which made it all the way to the bottom of the Billboard charts, reaching number 195, before fading into obscurity. His harmony singer on that record, Emmylou Harris of Birmingham, Alabama, made a point of promoting his music throughout her long and ongoing career. She has outlived him by 52 years so far. One more thing. Grant Parsons wasn't declared dead in Joshua Tree, but in Yucca Valley, home to the High Desert Memorial Hospital, way up at the south end of Cholla Avenue. We got a nice big earthquake in Joshua Tree National Park. A weekend back now, two weekends back now, are 4.9 that felt a lot stronger for those of us right on top of it. Like anyone camping at the Jumbo Rocks or Ryan or Hidden Valley campgrounds. And then to remind us who's in charge, we got about 300 aftershocks. Now, I was on duty way up in the Great Basin during the initial quake swarm, which occurred due north of Indio and Coachella within the southwestern part of the national park. And because I am increasingly uninterested in looking at a phone or a computer for any reason outside of absolutely required work, I had no idea. Got back here on Tuesday night and was catching up with a week or three of email and threats and overdue bill notices. And there was one of those big triple jolts. First, the house sort of lurched to the south. And then there were various bangs and snaps from the beams and whatever's left of my foundation here. And then my glass of bourbon nearly slid off the rickety stack of tables and benches I use for a standing desk. Luckily, I saved the bourbon. Saved it for me. This was a shallow tumbler, as they say down at the USGS office. Barely 2 miles beneath the rocky surface, just below Keys View. That's maybe why it felt so violent up here in the Morongo Basin, especially around Yucca Valley at the National Park boundary. This desert quake swarm had many of us talking about the big one some 33 years ago and running up the same complex series of fault lines from the San Andreas. But it wasn't on the lander's fault responsible for that great shake of June 28, 1992. The violent 7.3 quake that broke Highway 247 like a twig, knocked down the front of the Yucca Bowl, injured 400 people, and even claimed a single young life when a brick chimney collapsed inside a house up in Landers. I've read reports that two people died of heart attacks as well, but that's kind of hard to prove. Like, if I choked to death or whatever during an earthquake, is the earthquake really to blame? Maybe a little bit. One nice thing about living in a rural area with mostly single-story houses and cabins that are often acres apart is an earthquake can't do much more than shake it all up. You just go outside for a minute until it's over. Or you can walk around the house like I do, examining stress points, thresholds, little cracks in the wall here and there. But then you nod to yourself and say, well, that's not going anywhere. We did an episode on the history and geology of the Landers Quake some years back. It was episode 10, way back in 2017. It's called the Landers Quake of 1992. If those AI demon agents actually worked, you could probably just ask your phone to play it. But if you do that, you'll likely get some back talk about how you're actually referring to the Larry Sanders Show, which premiered on HBO in August 1992. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and we are featuring strange and unusual facts about the Mojave Desert. For instance, the death of mountain man John Muir. Now, we usually avoid speaking of death and hospitals on this show. We get enough of that in the real world. We also generally avoid the topic because it leads to morbid fascination, which is unhealthy. Many of us know John Muir for his large and crucial role in the creation of Yosemite National Park from the old Yosemite and Mariposa land grants, and for his influential writings on the High Sierra and other wilderness jewels of the West. But John Muir also loved our Mojave and Great Basin and Colorado deserts. He was, in fact, on another long stay at his daughter's ranch house in the Mojave Desert outside the little town of Daggett near Barstow, when a lingering influenza came back hard and had him at death's door. He had gone down to the desert in part to breathe the clean, dry air. Well, his daughter insisted that her husband take him the long, long way to the hospital in Los Angeles, where he died alone in his room on Christmas Eve. Handwritten pages of his Alaska book manuscript scattered on his bed. Age 76. And that's our regular reminder to let your loved ones die in peace at home, in nature, on the porch, wrapped in a blanket, surrounded by their family and dogs. Or alone, if that's what they want, but not in a hospital. Anything but the cold, lonesome hospital bed. Dignity in life, dignity in death. Let's at least try. From a letter by John Muir, dated August 5, 1878, Austin, Nevada. Dear Doctor, your kind note of the 24th was received the other day, and your discussion of fruits and the fineness in general of civilized things takes me at some little disadvantage. From the switch, we rode to the old Fort Churchill on the Carson, and at the upper, lower end of Mason Valley, we're delighted to find the ancient outlet of Walker Lake, down through a very picturesque canyon to its confluence with the Carson. It appears, therefore, that not only the Humboldt and Carson, but the Walker River also poured its waters into the Great Sink towards the end of the glacial period. From Fort Churchill, we pushed eastward between Carson Lake and the Sink. Boo! How hot it was, riding in the solemn, silent glare, shadeless, waterless. Here is what the early immigrants called the 40-mile desert. Well marked with bones and broken wagons. Strange how the very sunshine may become dreary. How strange a spell this region cast over poor mortals accustomed to shade and coolness and green fertility. After crossing the Sink, we ascended the mountain range that bounds it on the east, 8,000 to 10,000 feet high. How treeless and barren it seemed. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the Great Mojave Wilderness. This is Desert Oracle Radio. Heard on Joshua Tree's own KCDZ, 107.7 FM in the high desert, Friday nights at 10 p.m. And supported by good listeners like you at DesertOracle.com. Or patreon.com/Desert Oracle. Red, Blue, Black, Silver made the soundscapes heard on this and some 260 other episodes in our archives, available as podcasts. Support his work at the Red, Blue, Black, Silver Bandcamp site. So the weather was fine, it was spring-like. And all of a sudden it got cold again, real cold. I was just standing outside, listening to the owls. To the pair of owls. 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago, I recorded on a Christmas Eve broadcast, or near that time, Christmastide, that my old great horned owl had finally found love. He was up there hooting so low and solemn for so long. And Christmas time came, and a lady owl was answering him back. And they've been at it ever since. Bad time for the rats around here. They triangulate, you know? Not the rats, they just run. The owls. Thank you for listening to Desert Oracle Radio. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. Our next offering is from January 29th, 2021. Here is the one Ken calls Atmospheric River.
Ha 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 ha!
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. A rainy night in the generally dried up old desert. The wind howling. The leaks appearing in the ceiling. Drip, drip, drip. All this rain, after all this snow, all year long, we wait for a little bit of weather out here. And when it comes, on a night like this, a year deep into the global pandemic and global reckoning, well, that's what you call a mood. There are always joyful things, little delights, if you can keep yourself open to them. The roadrunner pecking at the glass door. You want in, buddy? The coyote who gives you a sideways glance before vanishing into the brush. The dainty little desert kit fox prints in the snow up by Black Rock Canyon. The guy at the liquor store who always recognizes you beneath the hat and the bandana and makes some friendly conversation. But hanging over all of it, there's some gloom. There's no use denying it. Dear Lord, give me the serenity to avoid cheery optimism, etc. All systems are on the edge, worn out. Worn out like the past century that reluctantly gives way to the new century. The Great War and the Spanish Flu and the Great Depression created the world of the 20th century as our very different but not entirely dissimilar earthquakes and global shakeups seem to be making the 21st century start for real in our current year of weird times. All hands on deck. The video game store, the looming Civil War. The decline of the West Coast and the fading game show host. Variant strains and stomach pains. Over this past year, if you haven't succumbed to the usual or the novel, maybe you found yourself facing the great dilemma. Should I go to the doctor for this probably minor malady and risk death or a long, miserable viral illness? Or should I just wait it out? Try a home remedy. Some whiskey or maybe a nice pipe outside under the stars. Look up at the night sky, see if anybody's coming to help. Not tonight. Not unless that string of Elon Musk low orbit internet satellites has a better version of the internet than the regular one. For reasons I cannot fully follow, a lot of people discovered the word existential in recent months. Most of them don't seem to know what it means. Like, they think maybe it means philosophical or historical. Who knows what anybody thinks? All you know is their shtick, the people in public. Virtual public, I guess. But in the most banal and accurate way, it becomes an existential question when you're deciding whether or not you need to get out of the house and maybe run an errand, get something to eat. This becomes your daily existential question. Do I want to go to the evil home improvement warehouse store to get a bucket for the water dripping from the yellowed ceiling? And deal with a bunch of dumb brutes making a big show of not wearing their plague mask and talking real loud like anybody gives a feral donkey's genitalia. Like they haven't heard it all before. When the restaurant patios finally opened up again last spring, I was glad to sit at a table outside and hear some human conversation around me while I nursed a cocktail and occasionally paid attention to whatever I was reading. But almost immediately, I think by the second or third outdoor dining experience, a certain archetype had appeared. The guy who wonders if you've considered the most obvious thing in the world. And this is addressed to the server, as if the server hasn't heard this exact thing from this exact character 100 times in the week after reopening.
You know what I've been wondering?
Says the guy, not asking at all. Not in any way cognizant of the fact that absolutely no one has ever cared what this guy has ever said or thought about anything ever. Which perversely makes the guy more proud of himself. And then he turns the mouth volume up a few notches, because probably the other 6 or 7 tables around him are also full of people who've never once wondered what this schmuck thinks about anything.
I've been wondering if this whole thing's a fake.
And then the other server comes by, and you sort of regretfully decline a second cocktail. Just gonna head back home. That was enough humanity, I guess. It was never going to be any other way in this country. And it was apparent from day one. Everything was broken and deranged to start with. So one shock to the system would have done it. Instead, we got all of them. Not one after another, but everything all the time. This is really happening. What do you do with 340 million people who really have nothing to do? Survival isn't really something we do. It's something we endure. We're not made for just that. Never were. Work-wise, we were made for a couple hours of labor per day. That's what our nomadic ancestors put in for food and shelter. The rest of the time was just vibing, you know? Traveling to a different place, telling stories around the fire, getting high and talking to the gods. That was life. But then the first Mark Zuckerbergs appeared. Empty vessels filled by evil spirits. What are we coming to? Something. Always something. About 10,000 years ago, here in what we call the American desert today, the happy people who sheltered easily in tule huts and limestone caves, along the rich inland seas and year-round rivers. Well, they began to run into a couple of problems. Used to be you could wander around for a couple of hours and find a giant sloth or something, and you had meat that could be salted and dried for many weeks or months. Fur and skins for comfortable shoes and coats and blankets. And all the fresh water and wild berries and fruits and greens you desired. And those magical little buttons off the cactus for the regular communing with your dream life and the spirit world and the great invisible data stream in the sky that talked to you, showed you things, amazed and delighted your senses. And then over time, the big animals became scarce, as did the year-round good weather, the ample fresh water. And before too long, the little bands of people, family and friends, started getting a little more protective of their usual mountain or valley or riverfront camp, and a little less welcome to wander freely themselves. Along the shrinking rivers and seasonal streams, those who could began banding together in larger groups to protect each other from the other roving bands of people. It got to where it was not safe to simply sleep outside on a fine summer night. So began the construction of cliffside apartment houses, the dreary business of next-door neighbors and latrines, and year-round garbage dumps, always full of flies and vermin. It got hotter and it got drier. The great inland seas of the Mojave and Great Basin dried up to playas of harsh minerals, where nothing grew, where the occasional water pooled on the surface was too salty to drink. You did not get up and do what you wanted. In harmony with your environment and your small band of wandering friends and relations, you got up and did what the man told you to do. That was when we lost Eden. And that's why they recycled that sad old story in the Old Testament. That's what Abraham was looking for again, you know? Paradise Lost. Abram, whatever. Always with the name changes. It's like in hip-hop. The Eden they remembered was up there where the rivers ran deep and the grass was green. Piney mountains and great herds of enormous deer cow creatures. We would later turn into cattle. But for the humans, no bosses, no kings. No sacred whore at the top of the tower awaiting the visiting host of the air. No boss man in his crown, the corona, in vulgar imitation of the radiant aura around the goddesses, who still walked the countryside then as they still do today. Mesopotamia was something like Phoenix. Ancient Phoenix and today's Phoenix. Too hot, too crowded, not enough water, the wealth in too few hands. Too many have-nots and too many nutcases all around. Not enough of what the people needed. No space, no air, no freedom. And so they scattered, not in confusion like in the Tower of Babel story, but in relief. Finally, good riddance. Sell the condo, get some cattle, and just wander. Wander toward the cool breezes of the Mediterranean, like we used to do, like we did again, like we will again, someday, on this world or another, in this realm or another. One group of nomads would meet another, maybe in violence, but mostly in neighborly respect. Especially the young people. The old man sees an approaching caravan and he reaches for his beating stick. And the young people start combing their hair. Maybe break out a little of that fragrant oil from Persia or Egypt. The spirits enjoy it when we are free again. Out on the land, in harmony with the land, it's quiet, it's beautiful, it's wild. And the spirits want our company. They want to commune with us. They want a little substance so that they can break into the visible light spectrum. Maybe even take physical form, just for a while. Long enough for a roll in the hay, you know? long enough for some of that sweet-smelling barbecue on the altar. The essence from a cup of wine. We still do that today, you know, pour a little out. That's not just for us. The nature of the kids is that they're always up to something new. You told them not to go in the cave, and now they're in there all the time, painting beautiful animals and bug-eyed spirits on the cave walls, pressing their young hands to the limestone, leaving red palm prints that will last for tens of thousands of years. The first social media post, God forgive us. And the old folks around the fire chanting drearily, what are we coming to? No room for me, no fun for you. Hey, let's check the desert weather, shall we? Here at the close of the first month of the first year of the third decade of the 21st century Common Era Gregorian calendar, planet Terra, solar system number 1, Orion arm, the Milky Way, local group, Virgo cluster, etc. Joshua Tree and Yucca Valley. Rain here and there, cloudy and cool throughout the week. Lows in the 30s. A little bit cooler in Landers, a little bit wetter, but otherwise the same. 29 Palms, a little warmer, a little bit drier. Amboy, Mojave Trails National Monument, Mother Road Route 66 will see daytime temperatures reach the low 70s by late next week, partly cloudy till then, with many spectacular clouds and many impossible shapes forecast for midweek. Make sure and go look at them. Boulder City, Nevada, much the same for your work week. Don't work if you don't have to. Hurricane Utah, showers tonight and Wednesday, low 30s for your night times, except for Monday night. Warmer on Monday night, no one knows why. Silver City, New Mexico, cold tonight, cold tomorrow night, rainy mid next week. Maybe consider getting a dog. Dragoon Mountains, Arizona. Cloudy all week. It'll get down to the 20s a couple nights. Might want to get a couple of dogs. Or get more familiar with that good-looking neighbor you keep running into at the post office. Come up with something kind of normal, you know? Don't be all weird. You can work up to the weird stuff. Well, I guess that's the general forecast for the American Southwest. We've got one of these atmospheric rivers coming through. I was reading something in the paper by Sammy Roth, I think, about the atmospheric river, how much water it carries. He said something like 15 times the volume of the Mississippi River. A flying river, imagine that. We get them now and then. With the climate changing so rapidly and so many headlines about this or that happening so soon or so out of line with projections, I start to come up with projections of my own. If nobody knows exactly what's coming, I guess my guess is as good as anybody's.
Oh.
from Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness. You've been listening to Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. The soundscapes you've been listening to on this program are by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. So, what kind of climate scenario do I sometimes wonder about? Well, what if these atmospheric rivers just keep coming because of the warming oceans and so forth? And it starts getting greener and milder here in the desert. The seasonal streams become rivers. The dry lakes fill up. Well, imagine that. You know the story the Shoshone tell about Lake Manly? That the people before them were seagoing people in their long boats across the great inland seas. And that over time, as the land dried up and the water receded, those earlier people did not go away. They just stayed up in their mountain lairs. And now their longboats traveled across the open sky from mountain peak to mountain peak. And that's what those beautiful, strange, lighted ships are that sometimes pass quietly above the Timbisha Shoshone in the night. Old stories from long ago, long before our modern people had finally figured out how to crash a winged bicycle on the beach in North Carolina, first in flight. We'd like to welcome WOOL out of Bellow Falls, Vermont, joining our makeshift network of participating community radio stations from coast to coast. Black Sheep Radio, 91.5 on your FM dial. And wherever you are, we got a podcast, Desert Oracle Radio. We appreciate your support on Patreon. We appreciate you listening. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Maybe we could use that sort of precipitation if it came down as snow. Oh well, our background today is El Calderon from Red, Blue, Black, Silver's Cliff Rose collection. And as always, I want to thank Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for creating and sharing Desert Oracle Radio with us. KGBM, its staff, and volunteers have my deep thanks too, and we would not be here without you, listener, so thanks to you. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. We have the full moon, February 1st, and this month is the snow moon for our full moon. So enjoy that. Watch those skies. Keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay warm and well, and I'll see you next week.